We had a collaboration with some Chinese scientists.
Here we have a vaccine. What is the problem? Get over it.
Now, if we do a really great job on new vaccines, healthcare, reproductive health services, we could lower that by perhaps 10 or 15%.
I hope that it can occur in a civil way. I mean civil in a special way, peaceful.
The biggest question, maybe in economics and politics of the coming decade, will be what to do with all these useless people.
I just see the need for such a dialogue, and I see the need for action. I see the need for a great reset.
We are 1,481 days into 14 days to flatten the curve. Thank you for joining us today. I'm Johnny Anderson alongside Melissa from Cutting Through the Matrix. Melissa, it is once a fortnight. It is good to see you again. How are you?
I'm okay. I survived having a tornado pass over me last night.
Yes.
I was telling you about.
Yes. And so did Bruce. Both of you had a close call. He sent me a message about an hour ago telling me that there was one that they heard the sirens go off, and there was one that touched down about 20 miles outside of town. And they were in the direct path of it, and it died, I think, right before it got to town. But they got pea size to 1.5 inch, 2 inch hailstones out of it. But that was about it.
Yeah, we had the same size hail, and I haven't had a chance this morning because I've just been go go go. But for 15 minutes last night, we were riveted to the television watching the satellite imagery because. This little town was in for 15 minutes in the direct path of it. And that's the closest I've ever been. Quite scary.
But, how big was it? Well, like F scale, what Fujita scale? What was it?
It hadn't even gathered into a scale. It was the formation that swirls around it. I think that the funnel started to take shape about 20 miles on the other side of me, but it was moving at a really rapid pace. It was amazing. But fortunately, all that happened was a lot of downed limbs and twigs, and I have to sweep the back patio later.
Well, yeah, that's your spot where you have your conversations, your free speech zone out there, isn't it? Yeah,
that's right. That's it.
Well, I'm glad that it didn't turn out to be any kind of damage or anything, because those things, you just cannot predict anything that happens with those storms at all. So you just kind of have to you're kind of helpless to it. You just have to sit there and take it. Did you feel like being glued to your television? Did you feel like you were on the set of the movie Twister from the 1990s?
Well, you know, that's funny because I actually just happened to sit down for a break about a month ago and watch about just 10 minutes of that. And then I saw that there's a new Twister. It's almost exactly the same story. It's just come out. Yeah, they're remaking
it. It was a good movie for the time. Yeah. It was a good movie.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing is that they call this area of Texas there are lots of tornado alleys in the country, but this is a tornado alley, North Texas. And there's always tornado activity going on somewhere. And that somewhere might even be within the county. It could be, 5-10 minutes away. But this one was literally over my head, the movement. And in my whole lifetime, we have never, knock on wood, we've never had one land in this town or do any kind of destruction, even though in neighboring areas they've had a lot of destruction. So I was thankful that all I had was some flooded plants and.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it is tornado season, and all throughout the Midwest and the U.S. I'm from the Ohio Valley, and we used to catch like the tail end of it because all of the. It was absolutely, people do not understand that part of the country where I come from. When I tell people here what a hot day actually is, they don't understand it because everybody's running around like, oh goodness, it's so hot. And I'm like, you people have no idea, because you get a 90 degree Fahrenheit and 90% humidity. humidity and then we'll talk, okay? Because that's what it is like up there. And they're like, no, no, it can't be possible unless you live in the rainforest. And I'm like, you have no idea. So, yeah, it's pretty bad. But we would get, being in that part of the country, we would get all of the storm fronts that would come in off of the plains, such as down in Texas and Oklahoma, and all the way up in through to like Nebraska and across Iowa and Indiana and all the flat and everything from western Ohio. And it would just smash into the Appalachian Mountains right there. And it would just, like, these storms would just hang there. Like, they, all of that cold air, all those cold fronts would be coming off the plains, and it would just hit that warm air, and it would just sit there. And those storms would just build and build and build. And, yeah, it was always the tail end of the tornadoes that we would get. So, and a lot of rain.
Well, you know, the tail end of a bad storm or a tornado is pretty severe weather. Yeah.
Yeah.
A tail end makes it seem like it's, oh, no big deal. But, you know, there's a lot of damage that tail end can do.
It was pretty bad. I remember one year, a lot of people had their roofs taken off of their houses. When I say taken off, I don't mean like, you know, peeled off. That's not what I mean. What I mean is the strongest storm that I ever experienced was, and I remember this because the had roof damage, but it actually took the shingles off of the roof and they were stuck straight down in the front lawn. As in like it these are like flimsy pieces of asphalt shingles. And so, I mean, if you do anything with them, I mean, they'll just break in half kind of thing. And if you can imagine the force that it took to rip them off of the roof and then stick them straight down in the ground. Yeah. So that's the strongest storm that I ever experienced with that.
Wow. That's something.
Yeah. Maybe we just need to all be educated by John Kerry and Al Gore. Yeah. Maybe that'll fix the problem. Right. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. Let's get into the TikTok ban. I had mentioned this to you in soundcheck, and it's not really a story that you have to follow. It's just one of these things. They're trying to use this as I want to say it's more like a bellwether kind of thing, where they're just going to say, okay, yeah, it's a Chinese app. It's bad. And they've already banned it on all the government issued devices, which they should. But this app, they're saying is a problem because of what it's doing to the younger generations that are watching it, as far as indoctrination and things like that, and changing their mindsets and all of the rest of it. Because TikTok is used differently in the West than what it is in, say, like China or parts of Southeast Asia and things. So the algorithms are different and they're shown different things here. But now the government says that they need to take the initiative and they need to ban TikTok. But I say that this is a Trojan horse, I guess, to ban all the other things that they don't like or that oppose whatever they don't like.
Well, okay. Educate me just quickly on TikTok, because the only thing I know about TikTok is that about a year and a half ago, my brother walked into the room and showed me a TikTok video of a woman making a cake or some kind of sweet thing. And he said, "That looks good. Why don't you make it?" And he presented me with a two.
I see. Okay. All right. So basically,
my understanding of TikTok is that it's basically anything that you want to say or do about anything in 2 minutes or under.
Pretty much. You can make the argument that this is one of the apps that's designed to lower attention spans. I think we've discussed that a time or two. And this is essentially the short videos kind of thing or whatever. And yeah, it's anything you want to say or anything you want to do in 2 minutes or less. And I've seen some that actually go a lot longer than that, but it's usually the shorter ones because the people's attention spans. But the argument
here... What's the difference?
Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, what is the difference between how it's used in China and what kind of content the West gets delivered?
I'll just put it this way. I'll just be blunt about it. All of the LGBTQ plus 2IA769RS, whatever they're using today, that is promoted very heavily in the West on TikTok, and it is not permitted on any of the Chinese versions of TikTok or any of the Russian versions of TikTok and so on and so forth. So,
So just because I'm bone ignorant on this, TikTok is individuals creating content and uploading it to a platform?
Yes, it's just a smartphone app kind of thing. Now, I will say that there is something rather disturbing about TikTok in their terms of service. We've actually gone through and we've looked at their terms of service. And I even recall that Joe Rogan was mentioning it on his podcast about some of the TOS when he had his people go down through and read it. And what's interesting about this is they actually say in their TOS that they reserve the right. I don't know how they can do this, but TikTok reserves the right to access your microphone and your camera on another device that does not have TikTok on it.
What?
Yeah, that's what we said. that's in their thing. And so the only thing that I can think, and the only thing that we can kind of surmise with that is if somebody is making a video or something, that's covering themselves from a liable standpoint. So if there's like some background noise or something and there's a copyright issue or something, they can't be sued. But the bottom line is that it is a Chinese company and it's a Chinese app and they're using it under the guise of security concerns. They say it's a national security issue. So like I said, they've already removed it from all of the government devices. So now they're looking to go broader with it.
Well, I mean, the whole thing is a farce. It's an absolute farce. Let's just start with national security and China. We have basically given them all of our manufacturing, access to all of our intellectual property, to a country that has no respect. They have no concept built into their, you know, we're in a experiment, if you will, here in the West, specifically in the United States, our kind of Adam Smith experiment, where we think we have individual rights, where we think we believe in concepts of the individual and free speech, et cetera, et cetera. China doesn't have that encoded into their national genetic identity. And we have basically in the West just WTO'd, World Trade Organization, everything over to them by design for decade after decade after decade. And for instance, here is Alan had a listener, as far as I know, still lives in China, Scotsman, married to a Chinese woman, and who was communicating in an email to Alan several years ago that anything he wanted in the software department there in China, he could basically get for free or next to nothing. And the example that he was using was the Microsoft Office suite, Word, Excel, everything that comes in that Office suite. Now, do you remember in the old computers that came part and parcel of the computer?
Yes.
Then you had to pay
with the package.
You could buy it with the package. Then you could just get another computer and get that package. And that was it. You owned it forever and ever. Hallelujah. Then they started basically renting it to you. And you know, I resisted this forever and ever. And up in Canada, I only used open source things, you know, to do my Word programming. But I reached a point with something that I was doing a couple of years ago where I had to bite the bullet, so to speak, and get that package. And it cost me a little over $100 a year. And that's the rock bottom package. In China, you get it for free. Why do you get it for free? Because they've stolen it.
That is what they do. They steal the code of everything. They steal the patents. they just copy it. That's what they do with everything. Yeah.
So what I'm saying is that we in the West, and specifically in the US, we've given them carte blanche. And now we're worried about national security.
Now we're worried about it.
Manufacture, if we believe in certain, you know, realities that they give us, they manufacture our face masks. They manufacture our aspirin. But we're supposed to be scared about their 2-minute videos. I mean, you know, do I want children getting rubbishy LGBTQ indoctrination? No, but they can get it anywhere, including, hello, the schools.
Yes, there is. And I might add that some of the most popular TikTokers are school teachers promoting that stuff.
I mean, this is just, it's farcical. I haven't followed it at all, but yeah, from what you're telling me, it's a big fat joke.
It is. Well, that's why I say it's just a way for them to say, okay, well, yeah, we're taking action against, I think it's a joke, but they're taking action against a certain app. They're using it as, what's the term they use? They put something up there and then they destroy it. Straw man. They'll put something up there and as like a straw man, and then they'll criticize it and they'll tear it down. Well, that's what they're doing with TikTok, but they can now use that to regulate any other thing that they don't like and go after anything else that they deem offensive or, you know, a threat to national security, which it's funny because, as you put it, the threat to the national security are the people that have actually compromised our national security to get us over there.
The other thing, too, if you think about it, okay, so TikTok is a national corporation owned by China, right?
Yes. Yeah, ByteDance.
Well, that's interesting because what is China now the only place in the world that's allowed to have national companies and a national identity? Because we're all stuck with multinational corporations against whom we have absolutely no recourse or defense. So Google says, and I must go, yes, Master Google, I'm sorry, that was medical misinformation that I posted. My bad. Go ahead, take it down and re-educate me. That's what we get with multinational corporations. It's a joke.
I remember the last time you were on the questionnaire that they put you through for that. It was ridiculous. You know, again, and just to that point, Google is actually, they get a different version of Google in China too. So all of that stuff is different, and everything has to conform to their social credit system, and everything works within the infrastructure. And I'd like to point out the two largest companies that helped them create their, as they call it, their great firewall. You know how the government monitors everything that comes in, all the data and everything. The two companies that were actually responsible for giving the Chinese that technology to enable them to build that infrastructure to do this were Cisco Systems and Broadcom. So there you go. So but that is that. So yeah, I think, again, you know, I think it's just a way for them to grab a hold of whatever app they want or whatever service they want.
And you're absolutely right. The point is, you know, if anybody in a position of power or authority, politics, et cetera, cared one iota about children being indoctrinated with LGBTQ indoctrination, do you think that Joe Biden would have come out and said, well, March 31 is, let's just honor our transgender day of recognition?
Yes, the visibility. Yes.
Yeah. The things that go on that are given to us to think about, it's a mockery of intelligence. It's a mockery of sanity. It's just, it's disgusting. It's truly disgusting.
Yes, it is. The transgender day of visibility. Yes, I saw that. Signed an executive order to declare that. And, you know, I sent that to somebody. They said, what do you mean day of visibility? They're the most recognized group in this country now.
Well, I'm gonna tell you what transgender visibility, how it really works.
Okay, please, I'm confused by this. So
okay. I got an email a couple of months ago from a listener in England, the UK, and she sent me some photographs of her gym where she works out.
Okay.
And they had redone the showers in the bathroom, and it was a kind of, instead of being completely opaque glass or whatever, there's all manner of ways in which you could build a shower that no one could see into. But what they did was build a kind of a semi-translucent, barely frosted glass that you can see straight through. And of course, a transgender man thing can go shower in the women's bathroom. That's transgender day of visibility. She complained to the gym owner, but you know, so either you're going to stop going to the gym or you just deal with sharing your shower and having it all hang out, so to speak.
Scotland, actually, to that point, I was reading this morning, Scotland is, they have either passed it or they're in the process of passing it, and Poland as well are in the process of, Poland, I know, has not passed it, but they're working on a law, I read this morning, by their left party or the new left party or whatever it is they call themselves, that say that if you criticize anybody, any members of this community, then you can face up to 3 years in prison.
Well, if Scotland has passed that, then they are, then that's just a sad, sad day for Scotland. Yeah. But then they then become the first, because it looked like Canada was with their the bill
I want to say that they've actually I'm sorry to interrupt, that I think they're doing it under the guise of like an internet censorship kind of thing, kind of like what Canada was doing, something similar to that.
So Canada's considering theirs I think is called Bill C-63, but if Scotland has passed it, then they're the first. And this is, and you see, this is what the TikTok, what you're saying is, that is the point. You know, LGBTQ is promoted at the highest levels. We are run by deviants. They don't care about children being indoctrinated. In fact, the indoctrination and destruction and mutilation of children is part of the goal here. What they do care about is they wouldn't want me to say what I really thought about the latest bombing by Israel of the embassy in the Iranian embassy. They wouldn't want me to make a comment on that. Sorry, I'm at a loss.
It's okay. Well, I'm.
Which is okay. A good thing. I don't want to be arrested.
Yeah, you're right. Well, we can switch topics. We can talk about the embassy. I like I said, I hadn't followed it. I did see that there was an issue where I don't know if it was a bombing or was it I guess it's the same thing. Was it a bombing or was it an airstrike that took place on an embassy that I had heard? And was the embassy? I don't think the embassy was in. Was it in Iran? No, it couldn't have been. Was it in Syria?
No, it was in Syria. It was in Damascus.
Damascus. All right. So I did see the right story. Okay. So
and it would have been an airstrike. It was a precision airstrike. I saw some footage, and they showed the embassy sandwiched between two other buildings. It was a very precise, clean, calculated strike.
And we know that there were casualties in there for sure. Or
yes, so far there are 8 casualties, but the key one is, and this is interesting, he was at the embassy, but it's I don't have it up in front of me, but it was the one of the top Quds Force. And in fact, it might have been. Yeah, here it is right here. I just had to scroll down a little bit. So the strike killed Mohammad Reza Zahedi and his deputy, a third general, 4 other people, including senior officials of Palestinian Islamic Jihad.
Okay, so that's why they hit it. Yeah. That's why they hit it. So,
but you know, you see, I mean, we get why they hit it, but
I get
okay?
why they hit it. But we don't hit embassies for a reason. You know, as I was telling you in soundcheck, and I'll say it, you know, here on the production, I don't agree with the fact that we hit embassies. I understand that, you know, I understand why they hit it. But when we have diplomats in a country, no matter, and I'll say exactly what I said, when we have diplomats in a country, it doesn't matter what those countries are, whether it's the US or England or Russia or China or North Korea or Japan or whatever, or India, when we have diplomats in a country and there are hostilities in each of those countries, we always give safe passage to people that are the diplomats. They always pull them out. So,
yes, of course we do, because our diplomats are the top drug runners that we send out. They're the top corruptors and enforcers. I mean, let's not forget that Hillary Clinton was our top diplomat. She ran the State Department. She was over all of our ambassadors, her little army of crooked, bent people. So, yes, God love ambassadors and State Departments and embassies. You know, I mean, again, though, those are the rules of the game. This is how people have played at war in modern times. And so now you've got Israel that says, well, we don't care.
Yeah. Well, I honestly, that little rant you had there, how could you say that? That was a secure server. She said so. Yes, of course.
Misunderstood.
Oh, yes. She's misunderstood. All right. She actually just gave, I read today, she gave a speech to a crowd of undecided voters, and she told them to just get over themselves.
Oh, really?
Yes. Just get over yourselves. So, yeah, I guess that's a way to win votes, huh?
I guess so.
She's still running around.
She's offended all the deplorables, so now she's turning on her own. That's
yeah, right. Yeah, sure. Okay. Yeah, I get why they hit it, but you know, as far as I'm concerned, embassies are off limits. You know, we don't do that. I don't care who's in them. You know, that's just my opinion.
Well, I mean, the other thing, too, speaking of the right to say, while we still can in this precious little window that's closing, You know, the one story that nobody has mentioned that I know since Glenn Greenwald's publication back in 2018 wanted to remind everybody that Hamas is an Israeli creation.
I have heard that from several different people. Yes.
Well, I mean, I don't think it's up for dispute. They've said on record, we made this to fight off, to be a buffer against secular Palestinian terrorist organizations. So they create a militant, a religious militant group that they want to control like a puppet. And guess what? The puppet turned out around and bit the puppeteer's hands.
Yeah, I think that was it. Correct me if I'm wrong. Like I was going to say, I've not heard any evidence to the contrary that they didn't create it. But I've not seen any evidence to the contrary that says that they didn't do it. But correct me if I'm wrong. But wasn't the premise of creating Hamas to be a counterbalance to the Palestinian Liberation Organization that was run by Yasser Arafat back in the day? I thought it was.
Well, I mean, the way I've heard it described was a counter to several different secular.
Yeah. Okay.
Palestinian organizations. And I'm sure, yeah, the PLO would have been the biggest of that secular grouping. But yes, that's...
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
The other thing, just switching gears a little bit, but still in that region. Yesterday, I just wanted to do a little bit of self-torture. So I went to the World Economic Forum site.
Oh, why did you do it?
Because I was, abusing
myself. Did you miss
myself?
Klaus and his bald head or something? Is that what you did?
I wanted to see what kind of video rubbish they were. I was at a place where I didn't have the eyeballs free to read, but I wanted to be stuffing something in my head. So I was looking for a video that I could listen to while I did something else. That was the whole driving force of it. I'm like, well, what better than the World Economic Forum? And I found a video that they put up, or a podcast from Radio Davos. Don't you just love the sound of that?
Are you kidding me? They have their own, they bought out the network down there now. They call it Radio Davos. Give me a break.
And this is when I don't have the date on the episode, but it was fairly recent. The number of refugees could double in the next decade. The head of UNHCR says why. So I don't know if they're going to tell us in this what UNHCR means, because anybody that looks at the WEF is supposed to know that. But it's a UN body that deals with refugees, right?
Yeah.
So he said, I mean, that's basically the story in a nutshell. We're going to have more and more refugees. And one of the interesting things he said, which is obviously it's a lie, complete lie, is that many of these refugees are because of climate change. But two other interesting things came out here. What he said, his name is Filippo Grandi, and he's the head of the United Nations Refugee Agency. So Filippo Grandi said two things that caught my attention. The first is he was a young global leader at the very beginning. So no surprise that he's the head of a top agency. So nothing that comes out of his mouth is true.
It's never going to be. No, that's why he's there.
The second thing that he said, and I think this is kind of an interesting thing. He said that... And they got to talking about the Middle East and Gaza and lack of aid going in there. And he said, well, that is under a different UN agency. He called it offhand, it's a division of labor. But I'm sure that people who've been following the aid going into that region have heard UNRWA, or UNRWA, however they want to say it, but UNRWA mentioned. Israel says that they're complicit in abuses and helping terrorists, et cetera, et cetera. UNRWA says that they are innocent of this, that all they want to do is get aid into Palestine. But the United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Palestine Refugees in the Near East is UNRWA. And it was created in 1949, obviously, with everything that was going on there. And it's run by a guy named Philippe Lazzarini. So I guess you either have to be Filippo or Philippe to to run a top UN refugee agency. I tried before we were talking, I was looking to see if he was a young global leader too, but I couldn't find it. He is Swiss or Swiss Italian. I posit that he's probably high up in the world of the World Economic Forum. So, you know, all I wanted to say is that we're given both sides of everything, you know.
Yes, of course.
Everything that's going on there. Yeah.
Just by their names, they sound like they need to be involved in a RICO case. Just saying. It's a stereotype. Well, I'm sorry. You know,
The UN has never been involved in any kind of racketeering. What are you talking about?
No,
they've never been involved in arms or oil scandals or food scandals or sex scandals. No. The UN is squeaky clean.
No. They are as clean as the driven snow. You better believe it.
Yeah.
Shall we talk about, shall we get into the bridge, the Francis Scott Key Bridge?
Yes, let's go to the bridge.
All right. So let's go to, do I have the, hang on just a second. I think I might have the actual, somebody actually did something rather funny in the beginning. They did this rather quickly. They whenever this happened, they ran out and they got an official Twitter account of the Francis Scott Key Bridge. It says, I have information that could lead to the arrest and imprisonment of Hillary Clinton. And then the bridge came down. Tell me it wouldn't be true. Yeah, that's exactly how it would go. So,
oh, that's so funny.
Yeah. Tell me it wouldn't be right. All right. So moving over to the actual incident, have you seen video of it? Have you watched?
I have.
How it went down?
Yeah.
Okay. Sped up video. But to the things that I had described last week, you know, I understand how ships go in and out of this port. They all do this. All of them go through the same way. There's no two ways to get in and out of there. There's one way in and one way out. And there's not any other way that you can turn around in there. This ship, along with thousands of other cargo ships that go into the Patapsco terminal, they all have to make that turn to get out into the shipping channel before they actually make the approach to the bridge. This ship did not do that. So even if they had the catastrophic failure like they're talking about on the... that's in real time. On the... onboard ship, if they had the failure that they're talking about where the rudder was stuck, even if that ship had been out in the channel where it should have been prior to, then it would have cleared the bridge still. So I'm saying just looking at this from those optics and looking at the fallout as in like our supply chain problems and logistically, I consider this to be something that was done strategically to damage us economically. That's just my opinion.
Well, we're just talking your opinion here, but
just my opinion.
Has your opinion taken you to who might be behind such an attack?
No.
Or do you even want
no.
to?
No. I did note this. I did get some information this morning that the crane that they're using to clean up the bridge has done several contracts with the Central Intelligence Agency. Yes. I'm just saying there is that. Yeah, I don't know. I honestly don't have any idea. I would not even hazard a guess. But just looking at it, if we're playing the economic warfare game, I mean, I'm looking at who would benefit, and that would be the people that want to hurt us economically. Now, rather that would be some of these
Biden.
Yeah, Joe Biden and company. Yeah, or our international adversaries such as China. All of them win in this case, in my opinion.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, I was telling you it was a slightly different set of circumstances, I understand, but I was illustrating a video last week and I just happened to stumble looking for different footage that I could use in Norway. I just stumbled upon a shipping cargo, not as big as that, a bridge, not nearly as big as that, but it had plowed into one of the pylons there and taken the bridge out in Norway. And I watched it. And I thought, now you see, that's what I would think it would actually look like if it had been a true accident. Just watching that Norwegian craft go into the pylon and seeing the bridge come down, it truly looked like what we were told happened in Baltimore. But that is just so, I mean, we talked off air about the you know, going, supposedly you're at 8 knots. You've got a power loss, but the rudder still is going to be propelled just by the movement that's already going on there. It's not going to go dead in the water. And they gave us this complicated thing about the pins or the bolts or whatever and the construction of the rudder and how, no, yeah. It's like, but just the propulsion in the water is going to keep moving you on a certain trajectory, I would think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if you combine that with what you're talking about, how they'd have to swing out wide to make that approach, it's just hinky.
Yeah, it just
I think hinky's a good word.
Even to that point, Marty was on here last week and he was talking about how a lot of these ships had been outfitted with bow rudders thrusters. Sorry, not rudders, thrusters.
Yes. Yeah.
And they operate on an independent system and they should have been able, if they were on board, that ship, they should have been able to move it even so, you know, because it operates on an independent system. So,
yeah.
And it didn't do that. And then now, and this is the great part about it. Now you have, what's his name, the ice cream salesman up there, Mr. Biden, who says that the federal government is going to take the lead on rebuilding that bridge. Since when do we use federal dollars to rebuild bridges? As far as I'm concerned, I wouldn't even lay that one on the city of Baltimore because we all know they don't have any money. I would lay that on the insurance company of the shipping company that caused that. You know, the Maersk Line, I think, is who they haul for. So they've got plenty of insurance money to cover things like that. And that's what they have insurance for. So that's what needs to be done. But now that you have the federal government saying that they're going to take the lead on everything, they can drag their feet and take their sweet time on getting it cleaned up because that port is shut down. That's the sixth largest shipping port in the world. That's our import export.
Well, that's kind of funny, Johnny, because my 94-year-old Aunt Betty said the exact same thing you said.
Interesting.
She said, why is the federal government paying to rebuild that bridge? That's just nonsense.
Well, and on top of that, it ensures the fact that it's never going to get done.
Yeah. Well, I think the point that you raised, too, and off air, that now you've got that, first of all, it's the seventh biggest port in the world. That one of the main things that they carry through there is what's the word you used? I'm lost.
Got,
poison,
got
toxins,
hazardous.
Yes.
Yeah, hazardous materials and chemicals, so, and that's also our largest. That's also our largest auto import export as well.
And you were telling me that now those hazardous chemicals that move through that port have to go through tunnels.
Yes. That's the
Which
only
is
way.
An extremely dangerous situation. This is just it's laying the foundation for another mega, mega disaster.
Yeah. So now you have to go through, if you're one of these companies, you have to now get the permits, right? You have to go through all that red tape and you have to hire escort services to transport that hazardous cargo. And you can only do it during certain hours of the day. So most likely it will be in the middle of the night and that's going to shut everything down, you know, or jam everything up, not shut it down completely. But that will. And think about this, you know, let's look at it in terms of national defense. Say we actually have to, use hazardous chemicals to create something in terms of defense, you know, national defense for defense of whatever. Say we get invaded or something. I'm just saying we need those hazardous chemicals in order to make that particular product, whatever it is. And now we can't get them.
Well, it's just okay. A thought. They can still move fertilizer somewhere, somehow, I'm sure.
We have plenty of ammonium nitrate. Yes, we do. Of course we do. So, yeah. So there's that. Anything else on the bridge? You know, I think it's just my opinion, but it seems awful convenient that gets taken out.
Yeah. You know what? Guess what? 2 weeks ago when we talked, I could not make my brain come up with the... We were talking voodoo and animal sacrifice and all that. Couldn't think of it. And as soon as we hung up, I'm like, oh, it was Santeria.
Santeria.
But Santeria is not out of Haiti. It's Cuban. It's the Afro-Cuban kind of animal sacrifice pagan thing.
Well, we can get into some of that. But yeah, go ahead.
Well, because you mentioned paganism and neo-paganism and that and crossed my mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That it's interesting that so many of these odd things like voodoo and Santeria have an element of Christianity. When you read about them being described, it'll be a blend of, African tradition and Roman Catholic tradition.
Yeah, one of the things that I was actually bringing up to the point, I know we were talking about Haiti the last time you were on. Did we talk about the leader down there, Mr. Barbecue?
Well, we did, and I checked in on Haiti. It's just a it's gone from bad to worse. I mean, Barbecue, whatever his name is, that gang leader, he's presenting what he's doing as, you know, voice of the people. But, you know, a lot of the people talking down there are saying this is not a revolutionary movement. This is not a revolutionary. This is just gang warfare. Because the rhetoric that's coming out, I mean, the country is a disaster. It's just unbelievable. And it gets worse every single day. And what these gang factions are describing, what they're doing is freeing the people. Well, if you look into the history of barbecue and the gangs and so forth, they were created by the ruling elite to do basically the off-book work of the politicians, the dirty politicians. They are not a free the people kind of movement. These are just gangsters fighting over turf.
Lawless anarchists, then, is basically what it is. So it's not
I can see. Okay. No.
Well, I did see something yesterday. Mr. Barbecue is upset because he was not invited to attend the latest diplomatic negotiations that are taking place.
Really?
Yeah, he's upset. He's very upset. Mr. Barbecue is. Yeah. I'm sorry. I can't help but mock the guy. It's like I'm looking at this and I'm like, where in the world did they get this guy?
Yeah.
It's always when they stick out there somewhere like that.
Well, if you look at the footage, I mean, it's quite sad and shocking. I mean, it's just completely a country that's been reduced into utter savagery. I did see today
that the Canadians are going to send 70 special forces troops down to train some military in one of the neighboring, I think it's the Dominican Republic, to deal with some of the violence that's actually starting to spill over. So they're going to do what they can, I guess, to try and help set up some kind of defense. I don't know the specifics of it. I just read today that they're going to send some soldiers down there to do some training. It's Trudeau. I'd expect nothing less anyway.
Yeah.
I'm surprised he's not down there on holiday, to be fair. The reason I brought that up is I'm seeing this more and more. I'm seeing that we've talked about the issues with the church before and what's going on with Christianity and how the church has been undermined and what they're preaching and what passes for the word that in some of these churches nowadays and the mega churches and things that are people involved with, you know, such as Mr. What's the big guy down there in Texas? Joel Osteen.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But as I see the decline of Christianity, you know, just from my own personal views and how I see things, and, you know, I see people that used to go to services every week and now they don't, and it's not that they've lost faith in the faith per se, it's that they've lost faith in the church because of, you know, the stances that they've been taking. I see a lot of push now. Culturally, just on, you know, speaking in broad terms, I see a lot of push to move things into kind of a this pagan way of worship, if you will. I don't even know if you want to call it that. I'm not all that familiar with it. There's this move that I see for people to revert back to the time prior to Christianity. And I thought we could discuss that a little bit because I don't quite understand it as to why this is becoming more and more popular with people.
Well, you mentioned while in the prep that you might want to get into this, and I hadn't thought of it at all. So I started, but except for one thing, which I'll get back to, but I started just pulling up some articles really quickly while you were doing all of the sound check, and I found a couple of things. The first thing is from the New York Times, March 30, 2024. So just like 3 days ago. It's Easter 2050. Here's what American religion looks like. And it says, I'm going to skip through it here. It's talking about the decline of church attendance. Gallup poll says they're confirming a deepening of the 21st century decline in church attendance. But diminishment coexists with transformation. The kind of Christian practice that's likely to endure and thrive as loosely affiliated church members fall away isn't the kind we associate with the flood tide of American Christianity 60 years ago. Meanwhile, the main alternative to traditional religion, a faith in secular progress, has entered into its own crisis of commitment and belief. And I'll just add here, because people can see the limits of science, right? And all of the damage and harm that can be done under the name of science and the scientific priesthood. That was my comment there. Okay, so mysticism is creeping back in around secularism's edges. So let's try and imagine how these trends might shape American religion a generation hence. Clearly, the old order of Protestant denominationalism, Methodists and Presbyterians and Episcopalians clustering around the city green, no longer defines our religious life. So what does it look like in 2050? And they start talking about the different things. It's a long thing, and I can send it. You can post it if you want. But it's talking about the catch-all phrase of pagans or neo-paganism. It says this is a catch-all for the emergent post-Christian forms of religious faith via New Age spirituality, astrology, UFO fascination or UFO fascinations, meditation and mind-altering drugs, magic and witchcraft, intellectual pantheism, and old-school polytheism, even Satanism. So what you see, because while you were doing prep stuff, I looked at two or three articles real quick, just scroll them, and I get that often what they call neo-paganism is blended with witchcraft or Wicca, but not always. And the neo-paganism seems to be kind of a catch-all thing here. But there's one other interesting aside. Don't want to get too deep in it. I am not bashing Red Ice Radio. I mentioned them a couple of days ago in a talk that I did. And what I had read, what I had learned was that they took a sharp turn around 2012. Prior to 2012, they had been involved in a mix of conspiracy kind of programming, a little bit of UFO, that kind of thing. And then after 2012, they took a move to white nationalism, and they're called white supremacists. But white nationalism. Now, I got an email from someone. I do not have that email pulled up because it would have been interesting to read to you. But they had said that a couple of talkers out there had actually called. They had identified and analyzed a shift at that time. And think about it, because we had all the Mayan calendar, the 2012, all of that stuff.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah.
They identified a shift away in certain alternative radio, video kind of blogger guys from the more traditional conspiracies into the white nationalism. And the reason why I brought up Red Ice and it stuck in my brain is because the guy that runs that married a woman in 2011. Her name is Lana Lochteff. And I was just reading about her in Wikipedia the other day when I was preparing that talk, and she identifies as a pagan. And it went on to say in Wikipedia, she says she has been trolled and threatened by men in the alt-right. And I would kind of think that part of that might be because the alt-right has historically been associated with Christianity, the conservative, you know, you think of the right, whether it's alt or not, as having the more of an identification with Christianity. But while you were doing prep and my pulling up quickly of a couple of things, I found that this is actually not new. This is from the Southern Poverty Law Center. Now, I'm just saying,
oh boy.
Right?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
But this is from the spring issue of 2001. So 23 years ago, they published something entitled Racist Music, Neo-Paganism, and Nationalism Drive Growth of Hate Movement. They said race-based nationalism, black as well as white, is on the rise as the number of American hate groups swells. Now, I don't put stock in anything that comes out of the SPL, but, you know, whatever. Here it is. It said this would have been 2000 that the hate groups grew by 10%. They were fueled by white power rock, racist neo-paganism, and the ethnic nationalism that is growing in places from the deep south to the nation's inner cities. It said around the country, white supremacist groups were increasingly Nazified, while fewer clung to specifically American forms of hate like the Klan and the anti-Semitic Christian identity religion. Racist forms of pre-Christian religions like Asatru and Odinism made major inroads among the young, while the hatecore music scene continued to swell within the same demographic. Then it went on to say that this ethnic nationalism was flourishing not only in America, but in much of Europe. So that's 2001. And then I found from Cambridge University Press something that came out in 2022, Nationalism and Conservatism in Neo-Pagan Movements. The case of Polish, and I'll slaughter it if I say it, but I can spell it for you,
it's a little difficult. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So there's a movement in Poland, a nationalist movement that has elements of contemporary paganism with it. It says, this is a modern religious movement referring to the pre-Christian beliefs of the Slavs. Nationalism is being replaced by a specific type of conservatism, which consists in creating a clear opposition between foreign and native cultural patterns, preserving and defending the latter. So what is native to your culture being defended? So again, it was just like a little seed planted a couple of days ago when I was researching a few things for a talk. But when you said it off air today, I just quickly said, okay, wait a minute. I think you're on to something here with a new blend of what they call neo-paganism, which, let's just face it, it's a blend of anything that works for you. And even the neo-paganists, according to Wikipedia and what I read an hour ago, says that it's a catch-all for anything. In other words, anything goes. That means that a Satanist might also identify as a neo-pagan, or a Hindu might identify with having neo-paganist ideas, or, you know. But somehow the preservation of a national identity goes along with how this is being used. Do I think this is grassroots? No, I don't. I think this has been seeded from the top for people to latch on to, knowing how much traditional religions have been by design under attack for decades. And a lot of people, I mean, even Alan has pointed out that one of the most extreme and successful attacks on Christianity came at World War I, when people from the top down, because don't forget that Arthur Balfour was into spiritualism. So Lord Balfour
It's interesting on Balfour. One of his portrait that was painted in, I want to say it was in like, it was in 1700s or something, where they,
it got vandalized.
It got razored and sliced up. It was slice and dice time at Trinity College.
Well, I mean, this kind of ties in a way, everything that we've been talking about, like TikTok, white TikTok, freedom of speech, et cetera, et cetera. People are noticing things. It's a splintered, chaotic, almost schizophrenic culture that we live in. The internet has made a very schizophrenic culture where people just kind of latch on to things. But it has also seeded out into the popular imagination certain things that would have been unthinkable 20 years ago, like, for instance, a protest group even knowing who Lord Balfour was and what the Balfour Declaration was, and ergo why that might contribute to something that's going on right now, and they would want to go deface or destroy a painting.
Oh, paganism, for example. It was 20 years ago. It was, I mean, I heard the term like 20 years ago, but it was just like some obscure thing that only people that dabbled in, you know, darker things would bring up. But it was never a mainstream thing, never.
I've only gotten ideas like you that it was kind of a fringe thing, or I knew that Wicca more and more was being promoted and more You've got Satanists in the military now, and make sure that you also have a chaplain who's a Satanist or whatever, you know. So,
yeah.
But what I'm doing,
we're doing after school Satan clubs now. We're doing after school Satan clubs.
Yes, I saw that. Right, I saw that. Yeah.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. Please go ahead.
No. Well, I think what we have, we are at the, this is going to sound grand and apocalyptic, but just stay with me for a moment. We are at the end of an age. Remember, we were talking about civilizations and Quigley and what's the next civilization, and it's the Western versus the Slavic. But we are clearly at the end of an age and the beginning of a new one. And so what you have is the destruction of all of the old, and that would have to include Christianity, and the ushering in of the new. Just, you know, will paganism be part of a new construct? I doubt it. I don't think so, but it's useful in completely undermining everything that came before. And the beauty of, at least the way it's described in Wikipedia, it's a free-for-all, because you can be a neo-paganist and believe just about anything. But the fact that somebody at the top decided more than two decades ago that they were going to blend neo-paganist ideas with nationalism is very interesting to me.
Yeah, indeed. But when I see this, to your point, it's kind of like this blending, and, you know, you just kind of like this homogenizing of all these different groups that can be mixed in within it. I don't see one way of it, as in, like, you know, you have, think of it like there's not like Catholicism, right? That's like the largest Christian denomination that we have in the world. So, and then you've got all the other spinoffs. You got Baptists, Methodists, you know, Lutheran, you know, all these different denominations of Christianity. But I don't see one way of this pagan movement. I see many different ways of bringing all of these groups together under one thing, if that makes any sense. So
I think it. I don't see that this is going to be like a new religion in the future,
no,
the thing. Yeah. I think it's being effectively used because they have a combination of different things. I'm going to basically take something from Alan Watt here, which is knocking down pillars that hold up a society or a culture. So the pillars have been effectively knocked down. You'd say that one might be the family and one might be religion and what, you know, but I personally believe that the structure has come down and we are living in the rubble. And, you know, so that's how I look at it, where there's no, you know, the pillars have been knocked down. And here we are.
I still think there's going to be a harder crash landing, but I agree that the pillars have been knocked down. I think it's going to be a little harder for it all to come down, but I think we're definitely on the way down. Yes, for sure.
I definitely think it's a little bit more involved than just digging out from under the rubble, you know, that the big, huge pieces of concrete are yet to hit us.
But. Yeah. And to that point, I'm talking to, I talk to a lot of teachers and a lot of, education administrators and things like that from many different countries. And they are all telling me, and this is to kind of reinforce your point, they're all telling me the same thing from a social standpoint, right? From a social harmony, as in like the homogenous thing you see in the up and coming generations, it's all the same. It's just chaos. It's absolute chaos in the institution, in the schools. And you have, regardless of what we were talking about earlier with, you know, the teachers teaching the LGBT, whatever, you know, regardless of that, if you take that out of it and you look at some teachers that are genuinely in there that are trying to teach, you know, there are some, there are a lot of teachers that are out there that are actually trying to teach. They all see the same problem. They're dealing with all of these different things with students now. Now you have students that are, I don't want to say, I don't want to just kind of blanket it, but there's really no other way. You have students now that are, the numbers are just astronomical that are special needs, as in like ADHD, ADD, you know, these types of things, behavioral disorders and things like that, psychological disorders. They are all now thrown into the same class, all of them. You have teachers now that are trying to teach, and they're having to double up as psychologists and social workers and behavioral specialists at the same time. So they can't juggle all of this, and you don't have the staff, and the parents are, well, basically in most cases, not all of them, but in most cases, they're just sending them to the daycare center for the day. Is more or less what they're doing. The parents don't want to do anything. They just want to drop them off and be left alone, and the school has to deal with them. And then, yeah, it's the same as the point I'm trying to make is it's, I'm hearing it from five or six different countries throughout the Western world, and it's all the same everywhere.
Well, I mean, you know, I don't want to knock any of your friends. I'm sure that there are some sincere teachers out there. I know that there are, and some who haven't, you know, gone along with everything. But I think sadly, teachers have been in the teaching / social work business for a long time, and it hasn't crossed many of their minds that this wasn't a good thing. My brother dated a teacher years ago, and this would have been 20 years ago, and she was already identifying happily little boys that she thought should be on Ritalin because they were hyperactive.
Yeah.
And there was a whole move where teachers, you know, this whole idea of the spectrum and anybody who wasn't inside what was prescribed as normal behavior, teachers were in the vanguard of identifying thinkers, you might call them, or hyperactive people, or, you know, little minds, and it tended to be among boys because they learn differently than girls and they have a different attention span, especially when they're younger. And the teachers have long been the ones saying, medicate them. Let's medicate them. And so it's a hard thing. What I'm saying is it's a hard thing for a teacher to see the whole scope of it because so many of them have happily been used as part of the agenda.
Yeah. No,
but
I agree.
As a source of information, I'm sure it's still interesting to hear.
Yeah.
You know, what their responses are, but they've been, you know, teachers are on the front line right now of telling little children, you're not a boy, you're a girl, you're whatever you think you are. There's not two sexes or, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, there is that. This hour has flown by. They always do when you're on. The last few minutes here, as per, it's always your time. Tell us about what you have going on the website and tell us about your latest podcast that you have out or what you have coming up.
Well, what I had out last week was part two with Elmer in Thailand. Really fascinating. He was a war photojournalist covering a lot of different wars and conflict and been in conflict zones around the world. Really interesting second hour with him. And what I have upcoming tomorrow is a conversation with a gentleman by the name of Prince. And he's a longtime listener to Alan Watt, and he's just terrific. So much common sense comes out of this fellow's mouth that I think it'll be a good episode. And then what I just posted yesterday that was listener made was a video from the Controller series on Thomas Malthus. And that's a good one to hear if you want to get into the roots of eugenics, et cetera, et cetera, depopulation. Then that's Thomas Malthus, and that is those videos that listener is doing. It's a compilation of Alan talking about there you go, eco science,
the idol of these people here. Yes,
mm-hmm. That's it. It's depopulation is the mantra. And so that'll be a good one. And so there's always a lot going on. I probably need a teacher to come and give me Ritalin and slow me down.
Yeah. You need to take a break. You know what? Maybe you could go to one of those camps, one of those re-education camps, and just take a long hiatus and just reflect on the choices that you've made for yourself.
Yes, that's right. And then I'll know at the end of that camp, I'll know that when a man in a white jacket with a very large hypodermic needle comes my way, it's a good thing.
Yes, it is. And that person will be able to identify with whatever they choose. Yes.
That's right.
That is right. All right. Well, it has been an absolute pleasure. I will see you in 2 weeks, yes?
Yes, thank you.
Again, that is Melissa from CuttingThroughTheMatrix.com. I encourage all of our listeners to get over there and take a look at the treasure trove of information where she and the other curators maintain the life collected works of the late, great Alan Watt. Again, that is CuttingThroughTheMatrix.com. And her podcast is Real History with Melissa. That is available everywhere you get your podcasts. Melissa, it's been an absolute pleasure. I will see you in 2 weeks. Thank you for being here today. Thank you to all of the listeners. God bless everyone and have a great evening.